Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 15, King Chitraketu meets the Lord, text number 41. Vishama Mati Na Yatra Nrinam Twam Aham Iti Mama Tava Iti Cha Yat Anyatra Vishama Diya Rachita Ya Sa Hi Avishuddha Shaishnu Adharma Bahula. Really strange how this is written, but Vishama Matirna Yatra Nrinam Tvamaham iti mama tavita taveti chayat anriyatra. Vishamadiya rachito ya. Sa ya vishuddha shashnur adharma bahula. Vishama matirna yatra rinam Tvamaham iti mama daveti na yatra yat anyatra. Vishama diya rachito yaha. Saya vishuddha sha nishnur adharma bahula. Ladies. Tvamahamiti mama taveti na yatra yatra. Shamadiya rajitoya. Sayavishuddha shaishnu dharma bahula. Vishama. Unequal. Your religion, my religion. Your belief, my belief. Mati, consciousness. Na, not. Yatra, in which. Rinam, of human society. Twam, you. Aham, I. Iti, thus. Mama, my. Tava, your. Iti, thus. Cha, also. Yat, which. anyatra, elsewhere, in religious systems other than Bhagavad Dharma. Vishamadiya, by this unequal intelligence, rachita, made, ya, that which, saha, that system of religion, he, indeed, avishuddha, not pure, shayishnu, temporary, adharma bahula, full of irreligion. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Being full of contradictions, all forms of religion, the Bhagavad Dharma, work under the conceptions of fruit results and distinctions of you and I, and yours and mine. The followers of Srimad Bhagavatam have no such consciousness. They are all Krishna conscious, thinking that they are Krishna's and Krishna is theirs. There are other low-class religious systems which are contemplated the killing of enemies or the gain of mystic power. But such religious systems, being full of passion and envy, are impure and temporary. Because they are full of envy, they are full of irreligion. Please repeat. Being full of contradictions, all forms of religion by Bhagavad Dharma work under the conceptions of free results and distinctions of you and I, and yours and mine. The followers of Srimad Bhagavatam have no such consciousness. They are all Krishna conscious, thinking that they are Krishna's and Krishna is theirs. There are other low-class religious systems which are contemplated for the killing of enemies or the gain of mystic power. But such religious systems, being full of passion and envy, are impure and temporary. Because they are full of envy, they are full of irreligion. Purport. Bhagavad Dharma has no contradictions. Conceptions of your religion and my religion are completely absent from Bhagavad Dharma. Bhagavad Dharma means following the orders given by the Supreme Lord Bhagavan. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, sarva dharman prajaja mam ekam sharanam braja. God is one and God is for everyone. Therefore, everyone must surrender to God. That is the pure conception of religion. Whatever God orders constitutes religion, dharmam tu sakshad bhagavat pranitam. In Bhagavad Dharma, there is no question of what you believe and what I believe. Everyone must believe in the Supreme Lord and carry out His orders. Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam. Whatever Krishna says, whatever God says, should be directly carried out. That is Dharma religion. If one is actually Krishna conscious, he cannot have any enemies, since his only engagement is to induce others to surrender to Krishna or God. How can he have enemies? If one advocates the Hindu religion, the Muslim religion, the Christian religion, this religion, that religion, there will be conflicts. History shows that the followers of religious systems, without a clear conception of God, have fought with one another. There are many instances of this in human society. But systems of religion that do not concentrate upon service to the Supreme are temporary and cannot last for long because they are full of envy. There are many activities directed against such religious systems, and therefore one must give up the idea of my belief and your belief. Everyone should believe in God and surrender unto Him. That is Bhagavad Dharma. Bhagavad Dharma is not a concocted sectarian belief, for it entails research to find how everything is connected with Krishna. Ishavasyam idam sarvam. According to the Vedic conjunctions, sarvam kal vidam brahma. Brahman, the Supreme, is present in everything. Bhagavad Dharma captures this presence of the Supreme. Bhagavad Dharma does not consider everything in the world to be false. Because everything emanates from the Supreme, nothing can be false. Because everything has some use in the service of the Supreme. For example, we are now dictating into a microphone and recording on a dictating machine. Thus we are finding how the machine can be connected to the Supreme Brahman. Since we're using this machine in the service of the Lord, it is Brahman. This is the meaning of sarvam kal vidam brahma. Everything is Brahman because everything can be used for the service of the Supreme Lord. Nothing is mithya, false. Everything is factual. Bhagavad Dharma is called sarvotkrishta, the best of all religious systems, because those who follow Bhagavad Dharma are not envious of anyone. Pure Bhagavatas, pure devotees, invite everyone without envy to join the Krishna consciousness movement. A devotee is therefore exactly like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Suridam sarabhutanam. He is the friend of all living entities. Therefore, this is the best of all religious systems. Whereas so-called religions are meant for a particular type of person who believes in a particular way, such discrimination has no place in Krishna consciousness or Bhagavad Dharma. If we scrutinize the religious systems meant for worship of demigods or anyone else but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we will find that they are full of envy and therefore impure. Vishama matirna yatra rinam atvamahamiti mama taveti chayaranyatra vishamadiya rachitoya Saya Vishuddha Shanishnur Adharma Bahula. Being full of contradictions, all forms of religion but Bhagavad Dharma work under the conception of true results and distinctions of you and I, and yours and mine. The followers of this Srimad Bhagavatam have no such consciousness. They are all Krishna conscious, thinking that they are Krishna's, and Krishna is theirs. There are other low-class religious systems which are contemplated for the killing of enemies or the gain of mystic power. But such religious systems, being full of passion and envy, are impure and temporary. Because they are full of envy, they are full of irreligion. Mam Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskadya De Sadharana. Srimad Bhagavatam says at the beginning, Dharmak Priyojita Kaitava Tra Paramo Nimatsara Satam, that it kicks out all the different types of cheating religion. So here it mentions that, generally speaking, religion, as Prabhupada mentions in the Srimad Bhagavatam, is performed for economic development, leading to sense gratification, and sometimes with the aim of getting impersonal liberation. But all such cheating religions are rejected. As a matter of fact, our progress in devotional service, ultimately to come to the actual platform of devotional service, is to get rid of our tendency to cheat, at least as explained, that Chatura Vida Bhajante Mam Jana Sukriti Arjuna Arta Jignasi Artarati Jnani Chavaratar Shiva. That four kinds of pious people approach Krishna, unlike the four kinds of miscreants. One may be foolish in the terms of one may not realize very clearly the difference between oneself and the material body. But those who are mudhas, they have no idea who they are, but they think the idea of life is to gratify their senses unrestrictedly. But those who are pious, They inquire why they are suffering, and therefore gradually they may restrict their sinful activities. But the Naradharmas, they restrict their sinful activities to some extent, but their ultimate aim is material enjoyment. So those who are a little pious, they give up sinful activities and try to refrain from them physically and mentally, but still their aim is to find a more comfortable material existence. Those who have knowledge, they know that comfortable material existence includes having healthy food, fresh, healthy, organic, whatever you may say, nutritious food, appropriate for one's state of digestion, etc. Clean air, fresh water, peaceful life, nice relations with people. This is all part of material opulence. Not living in a house with many, many rooms, just like we have one life member who comes to our temple regularly in one city in Europe, and he has a house with 50 rooms in it. But he has to sleep in a different room every night because he's afraid someone's going to kidnap him. So you may have so many rooms, but if you can't sleep very peacefully in them, what is the value of having so many rooms? Even in India, you can see people lying on the street sleeping very peacefully. So they wake up refreshed and they're peaceful. But if one cannot even sleep peacefully at night, then what is the value of having so much opulence? If one doesn't know how to eat properly, what is the value of having so much money? You may spend $500 on a meal, but if what you get is some dead animal left over from some ancient war, that what is the value of such opulence? Yeah, indeed, actually they say, if you go to the fanciest restaurant in many places in America and they serve you a steak, many times it's a frozen steak. You may be spending hundreds of dollars on it, but it's been frozen. And if you have no nice relations with anyone, where is there any question of getting any satisfaction? And if there's no security, then where is there any question of even any peacefulness? If you have hundreds of, you may have dozens of cars, but if you're afraid all the time someone's going to steal them or scratch them or misuse them, then what is the value of so many cars? Just an idea that I have so many cars. But if they put you in anxiety, if you're, everything about where you live puts you in anxiety, everything about what you're doing and puts you in anxiety, what is the value of it? So in other words, those who have some knowledge, they know, they have some idea what actually material happiness is. Otherwise, people may have pieces of paper or gold or whatever they have, but if they don't know what material happiness is and they're spending it for their material unhappiness, then what is the value of so much money? Better to be poor and happy than rich and miserable. If you go to the store with all your money, they say, well, this is a certain medicine. It'll kill you in 5 days, but it's very expensive. No, I want the expensive medicine. Because I'm rich, I only buy expensive medicine. Oh, I'm sorry, I can't afford that medicine. Well, this medicine is very cheap, but it'll make you very happy and healthy. Well, that's all I can afford. What can I do? So, those are the beginning stages. And then, on the higher stages, there's jignasu and jnani. Those who are inquisitive, how to actually improve my life, how to actually get out of the bodily concept of life, because that's the only real improvement. Material nature means endless misery, no matter how you present it. So to get out of endless misery, that's actual knowledge. So those who are inquiring how to get out permanently of my miserable condition and help others get out of their stressful condition, that's the beginning of real inquisitiveness. To inquire who won the football game or what the price of the dollar is, what the exchange rate is. That inquisitiveness is simply leading back to the same eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But who am I? Why am I suffering? How to get free from this suffering? This is actual knowledge. So those who are inquisitive, those who are pious, and those who are Maya Pritijnanas, who think that real knowledge is just mental speculation to manipulate the material energy even more, keep one in bondage, that's simply unfortunate. And what to speak of those who are Jnanis, like the Kumaras, who are actually striving to get out of the bodily concept of life and know the techniques of how to do it, the real Brahmins, who are developing the brahminical qualifications. But the whole root cause of being on the material platform, either for the pious or for the impious, is ultimately enviousness, which is the root cause of all our problem, is that we look around and we compare our material circumstances with others, and we want to either drag others down or put ourselves above them. We can't tolerate anyone who is more intelligent, wealthier, more beautiful, more famous. Anyone has more opulence than I do, I think that, well, I shouldn't worry about it because in the course of time they'll die anyhow and then I'll be on the top. Or they'll lose their opulence because they're envious of the real person who they should be worshiping, namely me. So people are generally envious of so many different ways, consciously or unconsciously. As Prabhupada said, that for the materialists, anyone with material consciousness, that they think if someone else is doing better than I am, then I hope against hope that they'll fail. There'll be one less person to compete with. They enjoy seeing others suffering, and they suffer when they see others enjoying. They think they're the only ones who should enjoy. Everyone else should suffer. That will make them very happy. So this envious attitude is sometimes much more subtle than we can conceive of. We're unhappy that we're suffering and others aren't suffering like we are. So we get together with everyone who's suffering like we are, and they're my friends because we can talk to each other, that we can relate. I'm suffering, yes, but I'm suffering more than you are. That's not true. I'm suffering more than you are. Or I have so much knowledge of how to be happy in this material world. I know all the newest supplements and all their effects. And well, I know more than you do because, you know. Or I have so much knowledge of how to live peacefully and happily in this world. So Krishna says, idam tu te guyatamam pravaksham anushuyave jnanavigaya sahitam yaj gatva moksha se shubha. Because you're never envious of me, Arjuna, therefore I'll explain to you this most knowledge, confidential and realized knowledge, knowing which you'll become free from all the miseries. So the real problem is that we're focusing our attention on everything else but Krishna. To be happy that we're in a good material circumstance is just as bad to be sad that we're in a bad material circumstance, because the same subject matter is there, my material existence. The only thing that can actually save us is to give up our attachment to both the good and the bad material circumstance and just focus the attention upon Krishna, knowing well that Krishna is the actual reservoir of pleasure and opulence. I can't be absolutely happy in this world, nor can I be absolutely miserable. But I can become Krishna conscious if I just try and focus my attention on Krishna and give up my plans for the future and my unhappiness that my past plans didn't work out the way I thought they should. Because they'll never work out in this material world. And even if it does, if one has the perfect existence, we could go back to our childhood, 1 year old, replay the whole thing, pass all our spelling tests, get 100% on all of them, go to the best college in the world, get the best job, best family, and at the end of life, when we had a perfect life, we would lament more than anyone will. That how can I lose this? It was perfect. One time Prabhupada was walking by a perfect house in one European country. The lawn was perfect, the trees were perfect, everything was perfect. And Prabhupada's comment was, this poor person, he's going to have to come back as a tree in this house. He's spending so much time making everything perfect. Imagine how much attachment he must have to it. Therefore, surely he'll come back to know it to enjoy this house. But if he's not pious, if he's committing sinful activities, he'll have to come back in some form of life to be happy in this house again. Maybe he's a tree or a cockroach or something like that with his own toilet for a swimming pool. Therefore, this attachment to anything in this material. Of course, there's a progress. At first, our consciousness is so unclear that Krishna consciousness is appreciated just for the fact, just by associating with the devotees, chanting Hare Krishna, taking prasadam, that somehow or another we're able to forget some of our gross desires for sense gratification. We're able to follow the four regular principles and get free from all the misery that accompanies them and the ignorance. And then one may rise up to the platform where one becomes a strict vegetarian, one gives up some desires for material sense gratification. And often the devotees think that this is good enough. Krishna, you did a good job. I'm really pleased with you. Everything's pretty good right now. And I'll come and visit you. Say hello every your birthday. I'll come and offer you a present. Happy birthday to Krishna. And sometimes when I have enough time, I'll even come for one of your Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance day because I heard you're related. So, unless one becomes jignasu, inquisitive, what is my real problem? Unless one can actually understand, I'm not really the body, and I shouldn't be envious of anyone, not just Krishna. Well, I'm not envious of Krishna. I hardly believe in him. There's not much to be envious of. Yeah, sure, Krishna's unlimited something. Beauty, right. All right. But if there's a beauty contest and I enter into it, Krishna is one of the competitors, so there's no reason to be envious of him. He may be the wealthiest, but, you know, look at the house. He lives in a little altar. So many people seem to be a lot wealthier than he is. So it's not difficult to think we're not envious of Krishna because we hardly believe that he's in every atom in this room. And that he's fully conscious just of this room. What to speak of being conscious of the whole universe, unlimited universes, Vaikuntha planets, Goloka Vrindavan. If we actually were aware of Krishna, if we had some perception of his opulence, then if we were envious, we'd definitely feel some strokes, pains in our heart. How did this man get so opulent? And we can see that personalities who did come in contact with Krishna with this envious attitude, like Ramachandra Puri, or even Pundraka, or others, we can see that they were, although materially opulent in some ways, or even renounced, their enviousness came out in many different disturbing ways. So with little knowledge, then we come to the platform of actually inquiring, why am I actually feeling this way, if not towards Krishna, towards other living entities? how to actually get free from it, liberated from my material conceptions of how I should have a perfect life and no one else should compete with me, and then the world would be good. If everyone just surrendered to me, then life would, the world would improve. No, we're just living in some imaginary idea of what reality is and what ideal is. Ideal is when we get free from all these false conceptions of life and just realize that our only shelter is Krishna, and as much as we take shelter of Krishna and not our material circumstances, then our real life will begin and our false life will gradually diminish. So that's really Bhagavad Dharma. So all these other religions that strive for promising a better material future, I was told that. And the churches nowadays, because people don't, you know, church seems irrelevant. The bank seems more relevant to people. If they go to church and pray for bread, well, bread has become so expensive that hardly, you know, even if God supplies it, then they have other problems like paying for the mortgage. So they think, let me go to the bank and pray to the bank teller, and he'll give me a loan, which is very difficult to get. And if I get that, then my whole bread problem is solved, and my mortgage problem is solved, all my other problems are solved. Why go to church and just ask for bread? As if God, his only business, he's, you know, he has a monopoly on the heavenly bread. You go to the spiritual world or the heavenly, wherever he is, and he has a big bread, you know, has a big bakery there. And all the angels have these delivery trucks. So instead, the churches are advertising, come to our Sunday program, and you can watch the football games, because they have these big, big screens. And right after the short program, then you can sit there and watch the football game. So people come because it's an experience to them. Not going to church, but watching the football game on a big screen. And they go to church and they can pray that their team will win. So this is not religious principles, nor a religion that allows killing of other living entities or killing of other religious, or being envious of other religious systems, that this is not actually religion. It is irreligion. It's just based upon enviousness. Although Prabhupada certainly said that anyone who believes in God is certainly in a better situation than those who are completely atheists. But in order to actually get the benefit of following a religious system, people should not become envious of other living entities, especially the animals and other human beings, and spend their lives decrying others as if they're the only ones who are pious and everyone else is sinful, who doesn't accept them as the only ones who are pious. So to appreciate anyone who believes in God and try to engage them in Krishna's service. That's simply the principle that everything belongs to Krishna. Nothing will ever belong to anyone else except for Krishna. And the only thing we can get is Krishna. The only thing that could ever belong to us is Krishna. Nothing else can ever belong to us. And everything is really meant for Krishna's pleasure. And that's the only way, by using whatever Krishna gives us, utilizing it for him, that's the only way we can actually do benefit for ourselves or anyone else. And that ultimately Krishna is our real friend, and he's everyone's friend, not only our friend. He wants everyone to be happy. He didn't advent just for a few people to become happy or some fanatic followers to become happy. He really wants every living entity to become happy because everyone is part of the same spiritual family. So only with that vision can we actually become non-envious and then work for the benefit of others. Para upakara, and therefore actually do good for oneself and try to do good for others. So people may think we're a fanatic or whatever they may think, but actually the devotee is the most broad-minded well-wisher of all living entities, and therefore he can actually do good for himself and others by doing what Krishna wants him to do. So, I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Comments?
Yeah, just a quick comment. Thanks for the class, Maharaj. It was great. But yeah, it's funny your comment about the Lord being like the bread supplier. It's funny, the word Lord actually means keeper of the loaves.
Oh, he's certainly keeping the loaves.
Like, yeah. So I think, yeah, maybe that's something to that. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. Ram Dass?
Yeah.
You want to read something about Sri Ram?
Yes, I'd like to just read some things about Ram Dass Prabhu.
Okay.
It'll just take about 5-10 minutes. I'll just kind of paraphrase everything. But today we're celebrating the disappearance of Ram Dass Prabhu. The picture there is by Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa-san. He was a pujari here in the 80s. And he was a very nice devotee. He was a big-bodied devotee. If you take a look at that picture, you'll see he's quite large kind of personality. Not only that, by physical, but even by emotional and heartfelt. He was a very big person, very kind to the devotees. And he did leave his body in Vrindavan, which is very auspicious. There's a saying that one who's born in that there are three types of Vrijavasis. I don't know if this is true or not, but there's a saying, one who's born in Vrindavan, one who lives in Vrindavan, and one who dies in Vrindavan. Those are the three types of Vrijavasis, and it says here that one who dies in Vrindavan is the real Vrijavasi. So Ram Dass was very fortunate in able to leave this material world in Vrindavan Dham. He left on the auspicious day when the moon is waxing between Ekadasi and Purnima, which is like Purnima is today. So it's a very auspicious month of December. Even Srila Prabhupada left this world in Vrindavan in the month of November. To understand how Ram Dass could have, was what kind of a person he was very kind. He had a lot of conviction and in able to do his service in Krishna consciousness. He was very steady in his service, determined. And he was a great servant of Sisi Rukmini Dorkadish, Gornitai, Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra. He took care of the devotees very nicely. He was very fixed on keeping the exact high standard of service that Srila Prabhupada instituted. He was actually very devoted to Srila Prabhupada, although he wasn't a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. He was very, very devoted to Srila Prabhupada and Prabhupada's standards in worshiping the deity. He was born in Philadelphia and spent 20 years of his life there. He spent the next 20 years in New York City, so one day he hitchhiked across the country with only a few dollars in his pocket. He wanted to settle in a Rosicrucian farm in California. So he arrived here in California about 1980. And his first day in L.A., he spent in a homeless shelter in downtown Los Angeles. And there some devotee gave him a dinner card and a Bhaktivedanta magazine, which he read in the shelter. It says that the next day, with no bus fare, he got out of the... he set out to go to the temple on foot. He walked the 10 miles, which took him 4 hours to get to the temple here on Wasika. A devotee named Nitai greeted him, gave him some Mahaprasadam, invited him to, come and stay and talk to the temple president. And the temple president asked Ram Dass, "Do you see what you like here?" And Ram Dass said, "Yes, it's wonderful here." And then they invited him to stay. And it says here that Ram Dass, he broke down and cried when he was given that opportunity to stay here in New Dwarka. Ram Dass had a nice, warm, outgoing personality. So when he first came, they had him working in the communications and public relations department. And he worked with Amala Bhakta Das. And so they were given the service of opening up book distribution spots and getting permits for Rathiyatra and Janmashtami. At that time, he dressed the deities once a week I think it was Gorni Thai deities. He would go on the altar once a week to address the deities. One day, Vatsala, the temple president, came up to him and said, wow, you'd probably make a good pujari. He said, then I'll talk to you about that sometime. And so, no more than a few minutes later, he came back and said, hey, we've decided you're the new head pujari. So you're going to be the new head pujari. So this is how he became the pujari. And he took that service very seriously. He did a lot of nice service. He used to cook a lot of sweets. He was famous for cooking the burfi. And he was a big man. So whatever he did was quite large. So, you know, he even had a big, huge bag he carried around with him. It was like a suitcase. And he carried over his neck all the time. And it always was filled up with things. The bag was huge. Yeah. The bag was just huge. And it was filled to the brim. It was like bulging all the time. Whenever you'd see him, it was a bulging bag. And if you so happened that you ran into him, he'd like to shower the mercy on you, give you a huge piece of burfi. And it was quite large. It was just huge. It probably took you about 2 days to finish it. So it was just tremendously big. So he was that kind of a person. He was very friendly and outgoing, very comforting to the devotees. He would do anything it took in order to do his service. He was very much known for doing what the needful. Very good like that. Not only that, but he was also concerned about devotees' health. Very much. He would always be concerned if someone was sick, because he always had some kind of remedy. He'd always find some remedy to, some herb or some remedy to help you if you were ill. So he kind of got known for that. He did love Srila Prabhupada's books. He would recite with verbatim some long prayers found in Srimad Bhagavatam. And on the altar, when he said the standard pujari mantras, he would recite them in Sanskrit and then in English. His thought was that what's the use of chanting the prayers if you don't know what they mean? So he always liked to recite the English at the same time. So it was just kind of nice and shows his kind of personality. Eventually, through the years, I came here. I was here in 86, so I spent several years with Ram Dass. And he eventually became sick. He had a heart condition, an oversized heart. And that was kind of far out, because he was an oversized person in terms of his love for everyone, for Prabhupada's movement, his service. So when we heard that he had an oversized heart, we thought, wow, that's pretty unique in the sense of like his real nature. Of course, that physically speaking, that was not good. So he did have a heart attack. When we found out it was somewhat sick, he was kind of encouraged to not work so much, but kind of back off. So he did, and he left the pujari service here in New Dwarka a year previous to this. And he was doing other things in San Diego. And in San Diego, he did get a heart attack, I believe. And end up being in the hospital. Then came back to New Dwarka, and we gave him an apartment here in New Dwarka for about a year and a half, free of charge, just to support him and his wife, Kumari. And we tried our best to take care of him. He was quite ill. Eventually, he became well enough or strong enough where he went to Vrindavan, and the temple here paid his way to go to Vrindavan, him and his wife. And we set them up in Vrindavan also, so that he could have a peaceful life. So we did that in order to just show our gratitude towards his service here in New Dwarka for Rukmini Dwarkadish. And even when he was here, and he had to go to the hospital on several occasions due to complications, still he would never be distraught or unhappy. When the doctors would come to him, he'd always be very blissful, and when the devotees would visit him, he'd be always very happy. So eventually he became strong enough where he did go to Vrindavan, and he spent about the last 3 years of his life in Vrindavan during that time, he mostly read Srila Prabhupada's books. He didn't get too caught up in anything else in Vrindavan, but just read. And he was very, he became known for taking Prabhupada's lotus feet, a small picture of Prabhupada's feet, and he made dozens of them. And whenever you'd come to visit him, he'd give you this little picture of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. I remember going visiting him several times, and I received one of those transcendental feet 3 or 4 times. And it was very nice. It was very, very sweet. So he did live there peacefully. He cooked a little bit when he had the strength, but basically he was quite ill. And he had a lot of pictures of Rukmini Dorkadish in his home. And it was really nice going there. You felt that he was really dedicated to Rukmini and Dorkadish, and they took care of him very nicely. And so eventually he became to the point where he was very ill, and then he left his body there in Vrindavan on the auspicious day. Kavichandra Maharaj was with Ram Das on the day that he left. They were laughing and joking together, and Ram Das was very weak but happy. And Maharaj gave him a usual treatment, a massage. And Maharaj says here, one cannot find fault with him. He was never scrambling for some position or any of those things. He was always blissfully serving Krishna. If we selflessly serve Krishna, that's the result. He will reciprocate and give us everything. And then he goes on to say, Ram Das reminds us that we can dig deep, down deep to think of the good qualities of someone. This isn't very hard in his case. He always wanted to see the solutions and not dwell on the problems. Sometimes our problems are quite complex. Ram Das exhibited his solutions by surrendering to Krishna, and Krishna kindly took care of him and arranged everything. So this was the auspicious nature of Ram Das Prabhu. By his surrender to Krishna, Krishna did take care of him, and he was able to leave in Vrindavan Dham. And even when they were doing the taking him down to the Jamuna for the cremation, so many people came, and so many were interested who this person was. Even prior to that, I think that when they were taking him out of his room, out into the front gate from the MBT building, there was auspicious sign of a white cow on the right side. And it says that when Radharani, whenever she would leave her home, on the right side there would always be a white calf. So there's an auspicious sign for Ram Das Prabhu. And when they were taking him from the room, he was such a large person, it took so many devotees, and they struggled so hard to get him down and put him on a palanquin. And it took so many devotees to carry him because he was really a big man. And I don't mean like he was fat. He was just a large person. So they carried his body to Jamuna and performed the cremation. And I'm sure that Ram Das Prabhu was somewhere engaged in some kind of service. Ram Das Prabhu ki jai. Anybody else would like to say something? Yes. Omkar Das.
I remember Ram Das Prabhu when I was serving for the Pujari department selling Didi Mahaprasadam. And at that time, we had Didi Maha sales every day of the week during lunch prasadam. And Ram Das was always buying special things for the deities. So we would have an opulent Rajboga offering and lots of sales for the deities in terms of Mahaprasadam. And oftentimes I would go to their apartment and get good association with Krishna Kumari and Ram Das. So that was special mercy for me. Ram Das was so kind and always concerned with the deity department and making sure that the offerings were done on time and that the pujari room was clean, and not just clean, but extremely clean. And he was always caring for the devotees. there was a time where he got really sick, so he was taking a lot of rest, and Krishna Kumari was making teas for him. And sometimes I could see that Ram Dass didn't have the energy or strength, but when he needed to do service, he would just get up and he would just pretty much forget about his bodily needs or his pain or tiredness and serve Rukmini Twarkadish. And Krishna Kumari sometimes would be concerned, and Ram Dass had gathered energy because he loved serving the deities. And I also remember times where sometimes he would be lying down and giving Krishna Kumari instructions on helping him with devotional service. And it gave me a lot of inspiration and a lot of admiration for Ram Dass because of his dedication. And I will remember that a lot for many, many years. Thank you.
Ram Dass ki jai.